please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Taylor C. From the Solution on the Shore Group in Neptune, New Jersey.
Hi, everybody. I'm Taylor Clayton. I'm an alcoholic. So, like you said, my home group is Solution on the Shore. We meet over in Neptune on Saturday nights, Friday nights, and Monday nights. We meet at the Shorelawn Club. It's an AA clubhouse by our house in Belmar. So, if you're ever coming out there, you want to check us out, you know, we'll give you more information about it afterwards. So, I want to thank the group for having me come out to speak. Jeff asked me to come out and speak tonight. And it's really an honor and a privilege. And, I mean, I didn't used to think that when people would ask me to speak places. I used to see it as a burden. You know, now I get to come out and do this, and it's like, it's a privilege to be able to do this. It really is. So, like, to be able to share the message that was so freely given to me, you know, and that was the last thing I wanted to do when I got here to AA. You know, this is the last thing I wanted to do. This was literally the last house on the block for me. But, you know, Jeff, my speaker bailed out on me about a couple days before Saturday night, and Jeff came out at the blink of an eye out for us on Saturday night. So, you know, it was a privilege for him to ask me and, you know, to return the favor to him as well. So, he said he couldn't be here tonight, so, you know, that's all right, though. but I appreciate it anyway. So I have a sponsor. His name is Anthony. I sponsor other guys. I have a sobriety date. It's November 3rd of 2011. It's not my first sobriety date. You know, I used to have a big book that had about 7 sobriety dates in the first page crossed off, like, you know, new date crossed off, and, you know, the list went on, and then that book got destroyed, and, you know, I had a new book, and it had a couple more dates in it, you know. So it's not my first sobriety date, you know, but hopefully it's my last, you know. And I know as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, you know, I could say that, but, you know. You know, what I've been doing so far in AA has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, which is not, like, unheard of, because the life beyond my wildest dreams is just normalcy, you know, living a normal life. I couldn't see my life like that before, you know, and it's thanks to having a home group, thanks to having good sponsorship, you know, thanks to showing up and doing things like this when I really don't want to, you know, because, like I said, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, this was not on my list of things to do, like volunteering my time, like, being sentenced, being coming to AA felt like a sentence at first. It felt like being sentenced to AA. And, you know, I was several times before I actually got sober. I was in and out of these rooms for a while, which seemed like forever, but, you know, it was really only like a few years. But those few years, they drag, man. When you're miserable, when you're in like the depths of this thing, and just the worst part of this, that like bitter morass of like self-pity and like just that. That spot where you just feel like you want to die, but you can't kill yourself, you know, it's like, and I was stuck in that for a few years, and that time just drags and drags when you feel like that. So if you're here tonight, you know, and, you know, if you haven't gotten a sponsor or anything, you know, you should probably reach out to somebody, because that's the first mistake I made, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous the first time, but I'll get into it. You know, like I said, I love my home group. My home group is the first actual home group that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous. At any of my attempts at sobriety, like, I never tried getting a home group. I never tried getting a sponsor, doing any of those things. And I can attribute all those to my sobriety today. You know, I would have liked to tell you that it's all my doing, that I'm the reason I'm sober today, that all these things I have done, you know, and if I'm not consistent with my, you know, with my prayer, you know, I'm not consistent with my 10 and 11 and 12 steps, you know, I like to start to take credit for things in my life, and I can't do that today. You know, this is not of my own doing. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me everything that I have, taught me just how to live life, just how to be a person, a human being, you know, not a taker. So, you know, when I grew up, I didn't grow up in like a, like, I didn't have a bad childhood. I had a pretty normal childhood. I was raised in North Jersey, and there is nothing that I can point at in my childhood to say that this is why I'm an alcoholic. Like, this is why I'm here today. This is why I drink the way that I do. There's nothing that happened to me like that. you know, I don't know if this thing is hereditary or if you're born with it or if it's something that develops over a period of time or whatever. I just know that at some point in my drinking career, you know, I crossed that invisible line into alcoholism. You know, my dad, he might say he's an alcoholic. He might not. You know, he had one DUI and he stopped drinking. That was it. He was able to, you know, stop or moderate. Like the book talks about the hard drinker. When they get a sufficient reason, they could just stop. But I mean, he was pretty bad throughout my childhood. But that was it. He got one DUI and that was it. He stopped. You know, he didn't beat me. He didn't like abuse me. He showed up for all my sporting events and everything as a kid. He was always there, you know. But that was it. He had a sufficient reason and he stopped drinking. And he's been sober ever since. I don't think he suffers from the same thing that we suffer from, that spiritual malady, right? I don't think he has that. Like, he lives, he's happy. He seems to be living a normal life, you know. He doesn't suffer from that restless, irritable, and discontent, you know, more than any normal person does, you know. And me, I'm not like that. I remember when he stopped drinking, that was about the time that I started drinking. That was when I was young. I was about 13 years old, and I picked up a drink. And, you know, I wasn't seeking any kind of escape. Although I can identify with having some of this, like, restless, irritable, and discontent feeling as a child, but I couldn't, like, point at it and say that there was something wrong. Like, I didn't have the vocabulary to explain it. You know, I just felt, I don't know, a little bit different, but I thought everybody else kind of felt like that, and I couldn't sleep at night. I'd roll around at night, toss and turn for at least an hour each night before I'd even go to sleep. I could never shut down my mind. That was one thing that just was always going, and that carried on with me. But I remember the first time I picked up a drink, you know, that feeling of being different. It lowered that sense of difference between me and my friends that night. And that's what I do remember that it did for me. I didn't have a really memorable first drink. I mean, I do. I remember going out and getting loaded the first night. And, you know, I didn't suffer from the mental obsession right away. I didn't suffer from the physical allergy right away. You know, I remember picking up that drink that night. And having a blast, and I remember it leveled that difference between me and you, you know, and I was able to just be comfortable in my skin, you know, and not having those racing thoughts, and I was able to go to sleep at night just like that, you know, and that's what I liked about it, you know, that's what I enjoyed, and I remember wanting to do it again, of course, you know, and if I was here today, you know, obviously I kept drinking a little bit, so I continued. You know, as much as any quick normal kid did, I guess. I thought it was pretty normal. And it, but the consequences started piling up on me real fast. I mean, not everybody has them. Not everybody gets in trouble from their drinking career. I mean, let's face it, though, it kind of comes with the territory. You know, you drink a little bit too much, you're going to get in trouble here and there. I mean, I would, like, you know, I started getting suspended from school. I started getting arrested. You know, getting DUIs, you know, public urination, you know, in school on the teacher's chair, you know, they tend not to like stuff like that, you know, in front of my whole class, too, you know, I was drinking Sambuca in a water bottle that day. That was nice. It was terrible. That wasn't the first classroom I pissed in that day, either. That was the worst part. You know, so I'm getting in trouble a lot. I mean, it comes with the territory. You know, I'm doing this and, you know, it's fun. It's fun for me. I'm enjoying it. You know, I'm enjoying living up to this reputation that I'm earning for myself. And it's given me some sense of pride, some false sense of pride that, like, I mean, I guess I'm okay behind that. You know, it's something that I'm able to put up as a wall, as a shield, like, and feel like, you know, I don't know, I'm somebody because of this, because of what I'm doing, and I ran with that. I ran with that for a while, and I really did, you know, and I thought that this was a phase that I was going to end up growing out of, you know, like I get out of high school, and I don't know, one day I'm just going to go off and have a career, or, you know, I'm going to go to school, you know, go off to college or something, I'm going to get married. You know, sufficient reason is going to come along and I'm going to be better, you know, and I'm going to be able to stop or moderate. You know, I couldn't see myself stopping. No way. I was going to see myself maybe moderating, like life was going to get good, and I was just going to, you know, put it by the wayside, drink like a normal person. And if you're anything like me, that happy day never came, right? It just never magically happened where I woke up and it was just like I was able to moderate. Now, if anything, I crossed that invisible line that I was talking about before into alcoholism pretty early on. It was probably in between like 16, 17 years old, right after I got my first, my license, right after 17 years old, I got my first DUI, like within a few months. It really didn't take long at all. It's terrible. Like, I remember even asking a friend, like, oh, you mind if I stay over? Like, I think I'm a little too messed up, you know. I was doing some other stuff. I was doing some drugs there at night, too. And he's like, yeah, of course. I blacked out, and I woke up, and I was smashing my Jeep into a tree. You know, it's like, all right. And I remember trying to drive away with all four of my tires popping. I just went into another tree on the other side of the road. And, you know, that was my first DUI. That was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's when I had to get the paper signed. You know, that paper, I had to come here to get that paper signed. And my dad brought me to my first AA meeting. My dad had attended meetings when, you know, he got his DUI, because he had to get his paper signed at one time. So he knew where to bring me. He brought me to the AA meeting that he went to, the only AA meeting he ever went to. And I went there, and, you know, I don't know, I was 17 years old at the time. I was definitely not attracted to what was going on here, that's for sure. I walked in the door, you know, I walked in drunk too, first of all. You know, I came in drunk, so obviously, you know, me hanging out with a bunch of sober people wasn't going to be very much fun. And, you know, I remember, like, just hearing a bunch of stuff about people saying how they can't drink anymore, and you know, how they used to be able to drink, and like they seem miserable to be sober. And that didn't seem like anything I wanted. Like, you know, I mean, it's not anything that I wanted. That's nothing that I want today, you know, just not being able to drink. Like, that doesn't seem appealing, you know. I needed something to replace that, you know, if they're going to give me something. And so I was unattracted to it, you know, and I came, I got my paper signed, and that was it. Like, I didn't come back to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, not for a while at least, not until I was introduced to it again. And, you know, I had to get into some more trouble. I had a second DUI, you know, got my license back, and then within another 3 months, another DUI. So the consequences, they piled up on me real fast, but you know, the consequences are never enough to scare me into sobriety. Consequences seem worth it. You know, anything that I'm willing to do, I'm willing to go to these lengths for the drink and for the drug, right? Because without it, I am incomplete. You know, at this point, like, my parents are already starting to bring me to psychiatrists and doctors and, you know, counselors and all that, and I'm only giving them the half truth. I'm not telling them exactly what I'm doing. You know, they would ask me how much I'm drinking, how much drugs I'm doing, and I won't tell them the truth. You know, but I'll point at other reasons in my life that it's this person's fault. You know, it's my parents' fault. You know, it's my girlfriend's fault. You know, she's crazy. She's the reason that I drink like this. Because it's easy for me to point at things and say that this is why I drink like that, right? But like I said before, I don't have anything that I could point at and say that, like, with any kind of clear mind, any sort of sufficient reasoning, there's nothing that I could point at and say that that's why I'm alcoholic. Like, and really I didn't. So the doctors, they started prescribing me all sorts of medications. I'm diagnosed with depression, anxiety, you know, ADD. You know, I was one of those kids on a leash when I was, you know, a tyke. You know, I was all over the place. I really needed to be on that thing too. But, you know, so I definitely have ADD, right? But the depression, the anxiety, they're giving me medications for, you know, these diagnoses, which I appear to have. And, you know, I'm taking these medications and they're not really doing the trick. You know, I'll take them and they're giving me a little bit of relief, but they're not giving me the relief that I want. And I know what'll make me happy. I know what's going to give me the relief that I want. And that's coming from a drink. That's coming from a drug. That's what really gives me that relief, that sense of ease and comfort that I'm looking for. And, I've come to find out now that because every rehab I've ever been to, they diagnose me with all those things and they give me medications for all these things, depression and anxiety. My untreated alcoholism looks a lot like depression and anxiety. And it feels a hell of a lot like it too when you're in that moment. But, you know, treated with the 12 steps, you know, I do not have any of those things today. I am not, I'm not medicated for any of those things today. You know, I am not diagnosed with any of those things with any of my doctors. You know, my untreated alcoholism looks a hell of a lot like that. And, you know, and don't get me wrong. I know I'm not saying that people don't, because, you know, you come across a lot of people that do need to take that and, you know, that do have these medications. And, you know, I just found out through my experience that I'm not, you know, I'm not. I just feel that way without a drink, without a drug, unless I have a solution in my life. But I don't know this yet. I am far too young, and you know, I definitely didn't think I was an alcoholic yet. Yet did I really know what an alcoholic was. I just thought I drank a little bit too much, and I did stupid things a little bit too much when I drank, you know. Eventually, because of these consequences, you know, I have to go back into AA, like I said, another DUI, and, you know, other charges against me. And I'm having to go into these different fellowships and getting the paper signed. And I think I'm an alcoholic. I think I'm a drug addict because when I drink and when I do drugs, I do stupid things. You know, I drink, I get behind the wheel, I crash a car. You know, I drink, I get arrested. You know, I drink, I urinate in public, I do stupid things, and all these things, you know, they don't make me an alcoholic, they make me an idiot first and foremost, you know, but that comes with the territory. So that's not what makes me alcoholic, right? What makes me alcoholic is that mental obsession, that physical allergy, you know, that spiritual malady. That's what makes me alcoholic, and I don't know it yet, you know, I have no idea. But I'm coming into these meetings, and I think I'm listening to speakers. You know, I think I'm listening to what they have to say, and what they have to say is going to make me sober, and I'm going to go home, and I'm going to be all right. You know, I think that by coming into these meetings, I'll be able to get this recovery thing. You know, even if I'm not getting a sponsor, if I'm not listening, you know, if I'm like halfway listening, you know, I go home, and I don't feel any better. At the end of the day, I feel still feel the same way. Like there's something inside of me, like I don't know how to put my finger on it, but there's a piece of me that feels like it's missing, and I don't know what it is, you know, and I feel anxious as hell, and I could barely make it through the day, you know, I definitely can't sit still, that's for sure, you know, I'm unsatisfied with the way things are going, like, and if not drinking and not doing drugs are the solution to my problem, why the hell do I still feel like this, and you know, I don't know what the answer is. I really don't know. And I'm coming to these meetings and I'm not asking for help because God forbid, you know, somebody wants to help me. So, you know, I do what I want to do. And I continue to do this cycle of in and out, in and out, in and out of these treatment centers for, I don't even know how many years, a few years, 3-4 years. And it wasn't until I was introduced to my first treatment center that I was like, I was really scared, you know. I was scared, but it wasn't enough to scare me into sobriety. And I go into my first treatment center, and it's not because I'm scared. It's not because I want to get sober. It's not because I'm making some kind of, like, moral decision that I need to stop doing this or that I need to change my life, you know. I went because I got robbed of everything that I had, and I had nothing left. And I know there were some people out there looking for me, and I needed to just kind of hide out for a little bit, you know. And that's why I went in, you know. And good members of AA were coming to meeting. They were bringing meetings into the detox. They were bringing meetings in at night, and they were delivering that message, you know. They were coming in, and they were offering help. You know, and I wasn't really listening. But this guy that was in there at the same time as me, he was like 29 years old at the time. I think I was like 19 or 20, and he came over to me and he tells me, And he's just a patient there. You know, he was just in there with me. And he's like, you don't got to keep making the same mistakes I made. You don't got to keep coming in and out of these places, you know, for the next 10 years of your life like I did and lose everything. Like, I lost absolutely everything I have. My wife, my kids, my cars, you know, everything. And I was like, you're right. Like, I don't got to keep doing this. I'm going to stop now. Because I thought it was just a matter of decision. Like, I just thought it was a matter of choice and control over this. If I just have the willpower to say no, that I should be all right. You know, but first I got to, you know, get all the stuff out of my system. I got to stop being physically addicted. And then I'll be all right. I'll go back out there and I'll be fine. You know, and like I said before, I get this idea that I can do it. You know, I can control this thing. But I still don't know what the problem is. Like, I get home and that feeling comes over me again, that piece of me that feels like there's something missing, you know? I just can't put my finger on it. I really can't. And, you know, and I relapse, of course, and it doesn't take long, you know? The most time I was able to put together before this was like 58 days. 58 days was my record prior to this. You know, my mom asked me, why do I keep doing this? You know, they're doing everything that they can. My parents were always like very supportive and, you know, they let me live at their house, even when I was going through all this. And they would bring me to these treatment centers. They would bring me to they would drop me off at the meetings if I asked, you know, and why do you keep doing this? Like, why? And if I'm being 100% honest with myself, I don't know. I don't know why I keep doing this. You know, I don't have an answer for her. You know, and that's even scarier. That's like, if I don't know why I keep doing this, that's the scariest part. Like, I don't have a control over this thing. She said, why don't you just say no? You know, and if it was that easy, I would just say no. I would just stop. If it was that easy, I wouldn't need to be here tonight. You know, I would just say no. I just wouldn't. But, I don't have any choice, power, or control over this. And I had to find this out the hard way. You know, it was about this time that I started doing, like, the geographic change. You know, I moved to Florida for a little while. I don't know if anybody's tried that. I got a lot of sober houses down there. I got a lot of rehabs down there. I send a lot of people from New Jersey down there. You go down there, and, like, you meet, like, everybody, every other person I meet is from New Jersey. You know, all the treatments, all the detoxes, they send everybody to Florida. And it's just like, man, it's just like a breeding ground of, you know, of people who attempt to get sober. Some of them do, you know. I was sober for about 30 days when I was down there. So, I mean, I guess that counts, right? I have friends that have moved down there and been sober for years. But, you know, for me, the geographic change alone isn't enough. I can move down there with the best intentions. And I got really good intentions. I have every means of... Like, I have the best intentions to go down there and just, you know, start over. Start fresh. I don't know anybody there. It'll be fine. It'll be great. I won't have to do it to keep doing this again. But within 30 days, what happens to me is my brain turns back on again, and that thought starts to slip back in. And that moment of, what do they call it in the book? Like, that moment of the mental blank spot. That's right, yeah. Where it's like, you know, it starts creeping up on me a little bit, right? The obsession starts to creep back in. And over the course of those 30 days, like, I slowly convinced myself that I made a rash decision. You know, I moved halfway across the country into a sober house where I knew nobody. But this was a rash decision, right? You know, obviously I needed to, you know, prioritize my life here. But within 30 days, right, like, that just starts to creep back up on me, and then I get that mental blank spot where suddenly it's a good idea. You know, if I just go out, I can get away with it for one day, you know, and I'll be all right. I'll start over again tomorrow. You know, I'll come back and I'll count days tomorrow, and I'll get it this time. But, you know, I just want one day of relief. And if you're anything like me, that one day of relief leads to 2 days, leads to 3 days, and I wake up and it sets off that invisible switch in me. You know, it sets off this switch in me which I can't control. Once I put that one in me, it's like I wake up the next morning and it's like there's not even any fight in me, you know, and I just keep going. It just, that's it. You know, the run continues halfway across the country in a completely different, it's like completely different world down there. And I just, like I said, I lived down there for a year. I was sober for 30 days of that year. The first 30 days I was down there, and I caused more problems, and I burned more bridges, and you know, I went to the gates of hell down there, and I lived in this place, and it was just miserable. I had nothing. I had this apartment, and you know, within about a few months, all the windows start to be covered in all the blankets in my house. You know, obviously, I wasn't just drinking at this point. there was some stuff involved, but I had nothing in the house. I had nothing but a mattress. I had a TV. I had bootlegged DVDs that I watched over and over and over because God knows I didn't have cable, you know, and I never left the apartment. And by the time I moved out of there, I flew home, which was supposed to be a round-trip flight. I was going to go home for Christmas and then come back down there. I weigh about 210 now. I was 140 pounds when I flew home for Christmas, and my parents looked at me and they're like, you're not going back there. And so I stayed back with them again, you know, coming back to mom and dad's house, you know. I just tore up their lives for another like 8 months. Well, it was worse. It's the same story over and over. Like, I could spare you a lot of the details. I mean, for the next 8 months, I was in and out of four more treatment centers. You know, I was arrested four times by the same two detectives within 4 weeks. You know, they were out to get me. You know, I could tell. they had it in for me. They didn't like me at all. And, you know, so then I'm blaming them. It's their fault. You know, meanwhile, every time I get arrested, they're trying to help me, you know, treatment center. And I, you know, treatment centers obviously are not the cure for me. Like, I've been to them. Like, if you've ever been to rehab, you know, there's people that are in there who've been in there tons of times. Like, they're repeat offenders. I'm one of them, you know. If a rehab would get me sober and keep me sober, I wouldn't need to go back there a second time, you know. Go back there twice, get more sober this time, you know. But it doesn't work like that. I wish it did. You know, but for me, it's like you walk out of those places and it's like that mind comes back on and alcoholism starts to set in, you know, that restless, irritable, discontent feeling comes back. And, you know, I only know one way to take that away. You know, I've seen friends come in here and they get sober, but I don't know that there's relief on the other side of this because I haven't experienced it myself. You know, I could see that they've gotten better and their lives have clearly gotten better, but you know, I just don't see it happening for me. I don't see it happening for a guy like me. A spiritual experience was not on my list of things to do when I was 23 years old. Like, it was not like what seemed the best option for me to have. But unfortunately, it was coming down to the point where it was the last option that I had. And I had no way to, I wasn't willing to ask for help. But, you know, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous and good members because, you know, after I got placed in what will be the last treatment center, and I went in there, again, not because I was making a decision because I needed to, but I was going in there for probation. I went in there, and I thought I was going home after that, but God intervened, you know, and I was going to go back to my parents' house, and they said, no way, you know, you're not coming back here, like, you got nowhere to go. And these counselors in there, they gave me about six different places that I could go from there, six different, like, halfway houses across the state. And, you know, I said no to everyone. Like, I was not going. I was going kicking and screaming. And the last day I was there, and they were kicking me out, and I had nowhere else to go. And they said, we got one last place that'll take you. You don't have to have any money. You said that you just, once you get a job, you pay them back. And I went kicking and screaming, man. I did. I didn't want to go there. You know, I really was at the point where I wanted to kill myself. Like, usually I go into places like that, and I, you know, within the however long I'm in there, 30 days or something, like, I start to get, like, this sense of, you know, I'm gonna jump back from this thing, right? I'm gonna make a comeback here. And, that didn't happen this time. Like, I walked in there, and I was, like, dead inside. I was broken. Like, I really wanted to die. And when I walked out of there, I felt the same way. I didn't feel any better. I was more scared than ever because that was the first time I had felt like that, where I felt like there was no life going on. Like, I couldn't see my life going on the way that it was going. And I couldn't see my life going on getting sober because it just seemed too far out of reach. You know, I couldn't picture it. It just didn't seem possible. And like I said, God kind of had a different plan for me. And he sent me down to this halfway house in Asbury Park. It's called Half Measures. Yeah. So they sent me this house, and it's in the middle of Asbury Park. It's not in the middle of the best neighborhood over there. And, there's all these guys that live there. None of them, like, you know, walking in saying, hey, just kind of walking by. But this one kid came walking in. I say a kid, he was like 10 years older than me, but it was by far the closest to my age out of anybody that lived there. And, you know, this kid got a case of Monsters under his arm. And, you know, this kid was bouncing off the walls. And, like, this kid, he's crazy. Like, even, like, you know, maybe if he wasn't drinking all his energy drinks, he's still that nuts. Like, and he said that I was coming with him to the meeting tomorrow, the next night. You know, I moved down there on a Thursday, and our Friday night meeting, I was on a Friday, of course. So he said, you're coming with me to that meeting. And when I went to that meeting, you know, one of the guys there, they reached out to me and they offered help to me. Thank God for that, because, you know, I was always told at all these places that you got to reach out, you got to get a sponsor, you got to do this and that. And like, even though I was clearly dying, you know, my face was sunken in, I was severely underweight. Like, I had a pretty bad twitch when I first got sober, too. I was really twitchy. Like, I clearly needed help, and I was not going to ask for it. And good members of AA came up to me, and they offered me help. They reached out their hand, and they started calling me, and they started helping me. And thank God for that, man. I really... If it wasn't for that, I don't know if I'd be here today, you know. It would have just been like another cycle. I go to another meeting and, you know, and I do the thing where I sit in the back and I don't talk to anybody and, you know, I'm gone as soon as the meeting's over. But they made sure that didn't happen with me. You know, they reached out their hand to me. They picked me up for the meeting the next day. And told me to wear a shirt and tie. You know, everybody refers to our group as like the shirt and tie, and the guys wearing. Oh, you're from that group with the guys wearing the ties? Like, yeah, that's our group. Yeah, every week you come there. Is this a celebration meeting tonight? I'm like, no. My sponsor asked me to do it. You know, I asked my guys to do it, and you know, I hated it at first. That was another thing. I went kicking and screaming wearing a shirt and tie too, because the only shirt I had when I first moved into the house, I had nothing but a garbage bag full of clothes. You know, my cell phone, I was at no money, no license, no car, like nothing, you know, no bank account, you know, I had this stained white collared shirt, and I had to borrow a tie from somebody, and these pants that fit me at one time, but were like really big on me now, because I was so, like, I had lost so much weight that, like, they clearly didn't fit me anymore, the thing was so baggy on me then. And I went there, and, you know, they made me a member there. They made me a member of the home group. And the group was a lot smaller back then. And the guys were not afraid to tell me the truth about myself. And I hated that, too. You know? The guys that were, you know, I hated the most when I first got sober are the guys that I'm closest to today. Because, like I said, they would tell me the truth about myself, especially when I didn't want to hear it. And I definitely needed that, too, even though I didn't think so at the time. I didn't want it at the time, either. But these guys started picking me up and bringing me out to the meetings. And, you know, we started going on commitments. And, you know, they started getting me into the book work real fast. Like, I had made a really half-assed attempts to do the steps when I was down in Florida. I had a sponsor down there who... I mean, he was a good sponsor, but I was not very thorough with anything that he was. I wasn't honest with him. You know, I did like an inventory, which was like 2 pages, like the whole inventory, 2 pages. You know, it's not very thorough. But I started to do an inventory, like, you know, right away once I got sober. You know, I met with my sponsor and he started bringing me through the book. You know, and getting into the step work real fast. And I had no idea, like, what kind of pace I was supposed to go at. But, you know, and all sorts of people were telling me that, you know, they're going too fast. You guys are doing the steps too fast. This is a 12-step meeting, you know, and we're supposed to be working the 12 steps. Like, that's the solution for me. Like, if I come in here and I'm dying and I need relief, like, I tried coming to meetings before and sitting in the meetings, and I didn't feel any better by sitting in the meetings. I sure as hell didn't feel any better by the time I went home at night. You know, maybe when I was in here, like, I felt like, okay, a little bit of comfort. But I went home and I felt the same, that same way, that, like, you know, that piece of me that feels like something's missing, that feeling. You know, when I started taking these actions that they were telling me to do, you know, and I started getting some relief from it, like, you know, and that's what I needed to do. You know, like, I didn't really have much time to waste. I was gonna die. You know, I was 23 years old when I got sober. You know, and I was young, yeah, but man, I was close. You know, I was definitely close. I mean, there were several times where I should have died, but something greater than me was looking out for me. I didn't see it like that at the time. You know, it was all God's fault for all those things that had happened to me years prior. You know, but, you know, when I'm looking back at it now, it's hard to doubt that he was looking out for me. You know, he placed me in a position where I was in at that moment, where I was working with these guys and getting in this book. And, you know, I like to believe that God, like, works through the people, you know. And these guys, God was working through these guys to help me. And it started going out and speaking commitments and doing these things. And I was getting wrapped up in AA real fast. And it was really cool. Like, getting to see these guys going on these commitments. Like, we got, our group has commitments to, like, you know, some detoxes and rehabs around. And the one that's closest to us is the Rosa Pavilion, which is the psych ward of the hospital nearby. And, you know, God knows I've been in one or two of them. So, you know, now we get to go on commitments there. I remember the first time I went on a speaking commitment at one of these places at the Rosa Pavilion. I had 30 days, and I was like, what the hell am I going to, you know, what am I going to tell them if they ask me how much time I got? Like, you're going to tell them. You're not going to, what are you going to lie to them? I guess, you know, I felt like, you know, I was like, I've had more time than this before, 58 days, you know, like, what, 30 days, and I'm going to go there, and she's like, you're going to go there, and you're going to share your experience about what you've been doing so far, you know, share the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's all we're there to do. And even afterwards, some lady asked me, hi, how much time you got? I was like, I got 30 days. She's like, that's great. I'm like, thanks, lady. And I went home, and I felt great that night. And, like, you know, that day, or earlier that day, you know, I had completed my fifth step with my sponsor. And, you know, I was looking for some kind of relief, like, you know, some kind of, like, I wouldn't say white light experience, but I felt like there was going to be something on the other side of it where I was going to feel, like, amazing, right? Like, I have these, you know, expectations of what's going to happen to me when I'm doing this. And I didn't have any white light experience, you know, at the moment. But I went home that night, and for the first time in my life, I was able to lay my head down on the pillow and I was able to go to sleep like that. You know, like, ease and comfort, like, just relief, you know, freedom. I was able to lay my head down on the pillow and just go to sleep. And that was the first time in my life I had ever experienced that. You know, always, like I said, as a kid, just rolling around in bed. And I could see that this thing was starting to have some kind of effect on me. And, you know, the spiritual experience, which I thought was so far out of reach, was, like, starting to kind of happen for me. And I wouldn't tell you that, like, I'm some sort of spiritual type, you know, guru today, right? Like, that seems a little, you know, far out. But, you know, what I've had, like, these spiritual experiences, right? They kind of feel like awakenings, right? They just feel like an epiphany, like an awakening of the mind, right? A change of perspective, right? And I mean, that seems more tangible to a guy like me. And that I was able to see, right? And then I was starting to experience these things and I started to feel differently. And that piece of me that felt like something was missing, like, it was slowly, like, it just wasn't there anymore. I started going through this process. I started making amends, and you know, I started to learn about how much I had hurt some of these people in my life. And it wasn't about the money that I had stolen. It wasn't about, you know, the havoc I have wreaked inside the household, but you know, about the peace of mind that I had stolen from them. You know, the people like my parents, you know, they weren't able to sleep at night. They didn't know if whether they were going to get calls in the middle of the night that I was dead somewhere, you know, because they had gotten calls that I was in the hospital in the middle of Patterson, you know, and they had no idea. They couldn't tell them how I had gotten there, you know, and my living amends to them, you know, is a lot more than just showing up and doing what I'm doing. Because most of the amends that I make, they ask me to keep showing up or just keep doing what I'm doing. But for my parents, it doesn't seem like enough, you know. I got to show up in their lives as often as possible. You know, I got to be like a member of the family, you know. And I don't live with them anymore. I still live in the same area I live in now. But so it's a couple hours from where I live. But I got to be able to show up there a little bit more. I got to live a little bit more differently. No, when I was going through this process, you know, I learned about that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles. At first, I didn't think so much, you know, it's the drinking of the drugs, right? But I eliminate that stuff and, you know, I'm still an alcoholic, you know, sober 6 years now. The drink and the drug are not my problem anymore. It's still my selfish and self-centered nature. You know, and like I said, at first, I couldn't see that. You know, I went through this process. I went through these 12 steps, but I still like to do whatever I want to do, right? I like feel goods, you know. I like instant, like I like nice shiny things. I like material possessions, you know. I like women, you know. I go for this. Whatever's going to make me feel better, I go for it. And after a year of being sober and still being active in Alcoholics Anonymous, I could find out that I could wreak havoc just as badly as when I was drinking, you know. In different ways. And at the end of the day, it brings me back to that point where I'm not able to sleep at night. You know, I'm rolling around in bed again. I'm thinking about this stuff that I'm doing throughout the day. You know, it's easy for me to show up in Alcoholics Anonymous for an hour and put on a good face and, you know, give a good talk here or whatever and think I'm like, you know, doing a great job, and then go home and, you know, I'm scrolling through Tinder for a few hours, you know, going here and there. You know, I'm going out and I'm buying shoes and clothes I can't afford. And, you know, and I'm not showing up in my parents' lives, not making that those living amends. You know, and I'm living, you know, as people would say, dirty, right? Like, I'm just not being, you know, being a good person, not being a good human being, not being good to others. You know, these spiritual principles, they just teach us to be good to others. Do more for your others than you would do for yourself. You know, reach out and try and help others. And my sponsor always tries to point me back in that direction, right? You know, when all else fails, working with another alcoholic always saves the day. And tells me to go back to these things, being consistent in 10 and 11. I'm always like, that's not going to work. That don't work, you know, even though I've done it before and I know it works. And I go back and I do it, and within a few weeks of being consistent with that stuff and just reaching out to somebody after a meeting, you know, just doing my nightly inventory for those couple of weeks, I start to get a little bit more clarity back in my life. It's weird because I don't do it for a few months, and like I have all these financial obligations that seem to start stressing me out. After a few months of not being active in my program, all of a sudden these problems seem worse and worse in my head. But they haven't escalated, like, you know, they haven't escalated any worse than they were months prior, but in my head they have. You know, all these problems seem worse to me. Everything seems more overwhelming. And I get back into my program and do what I'm supposed to do. You know, I'm a little bit more consistent, and those problems don't seem so overwhelming anymore. You know, life doesn't seem so overwhelming anymore. I'm not diagnosed with depression or anxiety or any of these things anymore. Like, I'm happy. Like, I'm content. The first time in my life, you know, and I know the first 4 years of my sobriety, it was like ups and downs. You know, because I come into AA, it works, it feels good, it's great. Then I start doing what I want to do again. It goes down, you know. And then I hit a point where I know I got to come back from it. And if I wasn't so close to, you know, some of the guys in my home group, you know, if I didn't have guys so close to me, I don't know if I'd make it back from that downward spiral. But I had guys point me back in the right direction and do the ups and downs, you know. But for the last couple of years, I've been for the first time in my sobriety, like, I've been consistent with it for like the last couple of years, and it's like everything just seems so much easier. Life just seems easier. Like, I just feel like, you know, like, problems still happen, but I'm able to handle it with a lot more clarity, a lot more peace of mind. You know, I don't stress these things anymore. I'm able to handle life a lot differently. It just gives me that change in perspective, right? That spiritual experience that seems so intangible has just given me, you know, this relationship with God that I had no faith in whatsoever. I had no faith in this process whatsoever, you know, but every time I start to do it, you know, I start to experience it, you know. And it's so easy for me to become delusional and think that, you know, I know better. I know what's best for my program, you know, but every time I start thinking that, I start going back down that track again, you know. And I've had these ups and downs, and I just, you know, it's been so much easier to be consistent in my home group and show up and, you know, reach out to offer guys help. Because the last thing I wanted to do, I was like, I remember when I was like 4 or 5 months sober, and that's when I was directed to start sponsoring guys once I got further enough. And I was like, well, that's it? Where's my sponsorship training manual? Where's my sponsorship, you know, program, like, where was I directed to do that? And that was all in the 12 steps, right? That's my experience, just sharing it with somebody else. And sharing my experience with someone else isn't going to be wrong, you know? I started doing that, and I really didn't want to. I didn't want to, because I like doing what I want to do. I don't want to be able to offer somebody else help. Then I have to give my time to them. Then I have to answer the phone for them, you know. And if I'm not offering help, if I'm coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and I've had this experience and I have a sponsor that has brought me through those 12 steps and has given me all the time to do that, you know, and I'm not turning around and doing the same thing, then I'm not really fulfilling my requirements here. You know, I'm not fulfilling my primary purpose here. Don't get me wrong. If it was up to me, I wouldn't do it, you know. But I know that if I don't do it, you know, I'm doomed. I'm doomed to live the same miserable existence I was living before, with or without a drink. You know, I know eventually it will lead me back to a drink, and I know life is a lot better without it. You know, the last couple of years since I've been consistent with this, like, you know, I get more of these, you know, life things happen, you know, I get a better job, right? Like, it's crazy. Like, I never had any type of career path. And like, by saying yes to a man in Alcoholics Anonymous to go on a commitment with him, you say, hey, this guy I'd never met before, he's like, hey, you want to go on a commitment? He's just getting guys like lined off. And I went on a commitment with this guy. This guy's my boss today. He gave me the career that I have. But, you know, and then I think I like to take credit for these things. And I get all these nice, shiny things. And like I said, I like shiny things, you know. And all these nice, shiny outside things make me feel great, you know, because I never had any of them before. And, you know, they're good, right? The nice, shiny things are cool. But they don't give me the life that I have, right? They're only outside things. They can't fix this inside job. They can't make me feel content. They can't make me feel happy. They can't make me feel joyous and free, you know. That I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. That I owe to showing up and, you know, doing things that, you know, I don't always necessarily want to do. You know, that I owe to good sponsorship and, you know, the home group and the guys that I hated when I was brand new. But these are the guys that offered me help, and these are the guys that showed me the way. You know, and as long as I stay consistent with it, there's no reason that I can't keep having this life, you know. So I know what it's like to have it, and I know what it's like not to have it, you know. So with that, I think that's all I have. So thank you for letting me share.